the streets are screaming now. They brought Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys. Death to our hometown, boys.
Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, this was the week that was for neoliberal policies. Now we're seeing what Trump's neoliberal policies are about on the fiscal side. Now the tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy get further clarified, and we're going to talk about that at length here today. In other words, the state is subsidizing the rich and their corporations even more, which is an essence of neoliberal policies. We might call this the emergence of neoliberalism 2.0. But at the same time this week, we have another announcement by Trump, and that is appointing Powell to head the Federal Reserve, another state institution here, the Fed, the central bank, which also has its major task in the last decade, subsidizing the bankers and the shadow bankers. Okay, and why will Powell be continuing the policy? Because every Federal Reserve chair since Greenspan's appointment in 1986 has continued the very same policy of providing free money and low interest rates, free money, to bankers, which then pass it on to lower rates for corporations that borrow money, and they borrow it not to expand jobs and incomes, but they borrow it, as we will see, and I've been saying, for other purposes. Yeah, well, we'll talk about those other purposes. Where's all this money going from the Federal Reserve? Free money, the bankers and big corporations and big investors and speculators. Okay, so the role of the Fed, as I point out in my new book, Central Bankers at the End of Their Ropes. You can check it out on my blog, jackrasmus.com, or website, Kiklos Productions. Or you can check it out in detail on the publisher's website, claritypress.com/Rasmus, Roman numeral 3. Okay, anyway, that's where you can go to check out the theme that the central bank is no longer primarily performing a function of lender of last resort, i.e. bailing out the banks when they periodically get in trouble, but its primary function has now evolved into permanent subsidization of the banks and finance capital, with low interest rates and QE, direct buying, and so forth. And they're all doing it in the advanced economies. All right, so we'll come back to the Powell appointment if we have time in this show. If not, we'll carry it over to the next show to show that there's not going to be no change in the central bank policy. It's the same. It was no change when Janet Yellen took over from Ben Bernanke. He just continued the policies. In fact, she provided even more money to the banks, free money. And, of course, Bernanke was a sycophant of Greenspan, and even outdid Greenspan in providing free money. Okay, so we'll come back to that. Powell means no change. No change whatsoever. And you could see the happy happies going on in the stock market. Oh, boy, here comes more free money from the banks to us investors. And stocks go up, you know. And you notice that 300-point jump here earlier in the week in the Dow. Well, you know, they got early indication it was going to be Powell, you know. Talk about insider trading. Yeah, well, no one's going to go after whoever leaked that one. In any event, subsidization of finance capital, central bank's main role, and the main role of the other government institution, the Congress and presidency, is to also subsidize corporations and the very wealthy, the 1%. Yeah. So the capitalist state in the 21st century is taking on a bigger role than ever before to prop up the profits and the incomes of the wealthiest 1%, the investors, you know, corporations and investors. That's their role. And it makes you wonder, is this greater role, increasing role of the state institutions, particularly the Fed and Congress, occurring simply because capitalist economies and corporations can't maintain their profit growth on their own? In other words, are they subsidizing them? Or is it that they can maintain it, and this is just an additional windfall because they can, you see, because their politicians can get them these big freebies? I don't know. It's hard to determine whether, you know, it's because of falling rates of profit, which I don't see anywhere, although Marxist economists, some of them, Anglo-American, say that. I don't see that. I don't see the collapse of profits on the eve of the 2008 crash. No, they were at their highest level ever. Of course, they then fell when you had the crash, but they quickly recovered within 12 months and went on to even greater heights and records here over the next 7 years. Yeah, okay, so enough general comments, and we'll return if we have time to the central bank subsidization issue, but let's look at Congress and its subsidization of corporations and the wealthy. All right. What I'm talking about is the U.S. House of Representatives further defining of the Trump tax cuts. They call it a tax reform, tax code reform. No way. No way. This is just a continuation of corporate and wealthy tax cut trends under neoliberalism. There's no big reform here. No, this is more of the same. And it's in this great tradition here since 2001 of George W. Bush providing $3.7 trillion in tax cuts, most of which went to the wealthy 20%, including a boondoggle of allowing foreign U.S. corporations to bring back a couple hundred billion, well, $300-400 billion of their $700 billion sheltered offshore, and instead of paying a 35% rate, paid a 5.25% rate, you know, so $3.7 trillion plus that, plus another $180 billion token 2008 tax cut as the economy was crashing. And then we get Obama, and Obama immediately $300 billion tax cuts, mostly for businesses. And that didn't work by 2010, so he gave him another $800 billion at the end of 2010, and he then extended the Bush tax cuts for two more years at a cost of $450 billion a year, and then in 2013 cut a deal with the Republicans and extended the rest of the Bush tax cuts for another decade at a cost of $5 trillion. So over $10 trillion in tax cuts. Half of the total federal debt, the slow growth of the economy under Obama, of course, also had the result of reducing tax revenues. And now we get Trump, you know, and Trump promised $5 trillion during the campaign. And what we're seeing in this tax cut, it's not clear exactly how much. They're saying it's $1.5 trillion. It's far more than that. There's $1.5 trillion in just the corporate tax cuts in this. So how can they say $1.5 trillion effect to the deficit? Unless it's really $2.5 trillion or more, and they have plans for the other shoe to drop here subsequent to the 2018 midterm elections, in which they will engage in massive cuts in spending, including Medicare and Social Security and some of the other education, etc. I think that's what they got in mind here. They're claiming the cut total package here is only $1.5 trillion. Before this, they were talking $2.5 trillion, but now all of a sudden it's $1.5 trillion. Well, I think it's more than $1.5 trillion, far more, maybe double that, and they got plans to take it out of the hide of government spending elsewhere. And we won't see that until after the 2018 election, you see. Anyway, let's move on to this tax cut, you know, the Trump neoliberal 2.0 tax cut here. Let's talk about, one, the facts, what is actually being cut, who pays, who benefits. But I also want to talk about the ideology of tax cuts. You know, they're calling this bill Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Ever since George W. Bush, every major tax cut for the rich and their corporations has been called a jobs bill. And none of them have had any effect whatsoever on jobs. All right, we want to talk about the ideology. In other words, how they lie about it and misrepresent the facts and sell it. That's the ideology. Ideology is not an ism. Ideology is misrepresentation. Conscious, purposeful misrepresentation of reality for the purposes of serving a certain social group. That's what ideology is. And of course, the argument tax cuts create jobs is part of the ideology of taxation under neoliberalism. But there's also a further couple arguments here related, and that is, oh, the tax cuts will raise wages. Not just jobs, they'll actually result in wage hikes and income hikes for, you know, middle-income households. Well, let's look at that. And they say it will mean GDP will grow, will boost the economy to 3%. Other elements of the ideology of all this is, this is tax reform. Reforming the code when it's really a tax giveaway, right? Or the U.S. corporations pay the highest corporate tax rate in the world. And we pay a dual rate. We pay U.S. government and U.S. corporations pay foreign governments. And the combined tax rate is over 50%. Well, that's not fair, they argue, because other corporations in other countries don't have to pay dual rates. Well, that's part of the misrepresentation and lies, i.e. ideology as well, that we'll look at here. See, the U.S. corporations do not pay the highest corporate tax rate. All right. So the facts, the ideology, and we also want to look at the consequences. What are going to be the consequences for deficits and the debt here? Likely candidates for spending reductions that'll come separately. And what's the consequences for income inequality? Whose incomes will rise and whose incomes will decline and why? All right, so those three elements, facts, ideology, consequences, will be the focus of our show today. Dedicated primarily to the Bush tax cut proposal here that came out of the House. Of course, it's got to go through the Senate, and we'll see what happens there. But I don't see much really changing in the Senate. The Republicans really, really want this, you see. They really want this. They got nothing else to show for the first year under Trump. So they're rolling all their dice on this tax cut bill so they can run in the midterms next year on, oh, I cut your taxes. And they will probably entice the Democrats in the Senate with some freebies here in other areas in order to get the tax cuts passed. I predict they will eventually pass this thing. There will be some revisions, but they'll buy off some Democrats to get what they want. You know, it doesn't take too many. They'll buy them off. All right. So let's look at some of this, some of the facts. All right. The richest 1% households, 1.4 million taxpayers, whose adjusted gross income is $466,000 a year or more. Right, that's the wealthiest 1%. They're supposed to pay nominal rate of 39.6%. We're talking about personal income tax now. Okay, we're going to look at the corporate income tax, the personal income tax. Those are the two key taxes here that are addressed in this bill. Other revenue comes from payroll taxes, but that's earmarked for Social Security and Medicare. It's supposed to be, Social Security produces a surplus, which the government then borrows to enable it to conduct more spending and reduce taxes. That's been going on since Bush, you see. Okay, so 39.6% is what we call the nominal rate. That's what's on paper, and that's what you hear in the press. You know, Trump did over and over again. That's what these poor rich folks pay, 40% almost of their income. No. Their real average rate is 27%, you see. Well, where do we get these figures from? Oh, we get these figures from the Tax Policy Center and from the Congressional Budget Office. I didn't make them up. In fact, the super rich, the wealthiest 1/100th of the 1%, they only pay 24%. Yeah. So, you know, they're really starting in at the rate that the middle bracket of households, i.e. folks making $50,000 a year, they're paying the same rate as folks making $50,000 a year, you see. Really, the wealthiest 1% and super wealthy 1% pay the same as middle-income working-class households. Some other interesting points before we start dissecting section by section of this proposal here. The Congressional Budget Office estimated the 10 top loopholes, 10 top tax loopholes, because, you see, very few of the loopholes are even being adjusted here in this proposal. They're talking about rates, but they're leaving most of the loopholes in there, which I need to repeat here what I've repeated in the past, and that is, what's the tax cut shell game in the U.S.? Well, the tax cut shell game is they reduce corporate loopholes, reduce the loopholes, but they cut the rates. And when people get upset about the rates are too low for the rich, they raise the rates. I'm talking over time, decades here. They raise the rates, but they open up the loopholes, you see. They play both sides, loopholes and rates game. That's the shell game here. And when people are focused on one loopholes or focused on rates, they'll make it look like they're doing something. But for the rich, they'll open up the other one. And the net result after 30 years is that the rich are paying less and less as a percent of total income. Okay, that's the shell game, you see. That's the shell game. There's other versions of the shell game. Within the personal income tax, cutting the rich and raising the middle class, and raising payroll taxes while they reduce income taxes. You know, there's all kinds of leisure domain going on here to get the results benefiting the super wealthy. The CBO estimated the top 10 loopholes, as of 2013, top 10 loopholes in the tax code. This is the last year so far that we've got this kind of report from the CBO. About $1 trillion, right? A year, right? Over a decade, the CBO estimated, that's the Congressional Budget Office research arm, over 2014 to 2023, the CBO estimated these 10 top loopholes in the tax code would amount to a $12 trillion cut. There's $12 trillion in loopholes, folks. Why don't they just go and close the loopholes? You know, stop giving tax cuts for corporations and the rich if you need more federal revenue. Just close the loopholes. Okay, so what are the biggest loopholes? All right, the biggest loopholes are long-term capital gains. The taxation on long-term capital gains is between 15 and 20%. Not 39.6%. It's between 15 and 20%. The highest income level capital gains pay 20%, and those below them pay 15% on capital gains. What are capital gains? Oh, that's interest income, that's dividends, you know, that's rent, that's a sale of property, real estate, sale of your stocks and your bonds. Those are all capital incomes and capital gains, right? So they only pay 15 to 20% long-term capital gains, right? If they had to pay the same tax rate as other wage incomes, right, it would bring $1.34 trillion into the Treasury. $1.34 trillion. Well, that's a lot of money, isn't it? Oh, why are we taxing folks who speculate in stocks and bonds and properties, you know, half of what the rest of forms of income are taxed? That's less than the $50,000 a year middle-class household, right, paying 25%. And by the way, the wealthiest 1% households get 70% of this capital gains loophole. Yes, they get the lion's share, the 1%, and the rest goes to the next 5%. Okay, so it's the super rich who are really benefiting from, and of course, stock markets and bond markets and so forth, which means finance capital. You know, they're the guys who make money on all of this. The second biggest loophole here in the personal income tax we're talking about, loopholes. There are loopholes in the corporate tax, but we're talking about the personal tax. The second is stocks that are transferred at death are not taxed. Yeah, they're not taxed. They're not part of state tax. They're not taxed at all. The cost of that is $644 billion. $1.34 trillion for the long-term capital gains tax loophole, $644 billion for stock transfer at death, no taxation loophole. State and local tax deductions over a decade, another $1.1 trillion. Mortgage interest deductions, another $1.0 trillion. And it's pretty clear that the higher-ups folks, higher-income folks, get the lion's share of this, right? The 1% wealthiest households get 27% of the state and local tax deduction. Okay. So the big four deductions, the mortgage interest, the state local tax, the no taxation of stock transfers at death, and the long-term capital gains loophole, big four, $400 billion a year, or $4 trillion over the decade, $400 billion every year. And, of course, the biggies, well over half of that, are the stock transfer and the long-term capital gains. Now, in addition to that, corporations get a tax deduction for all their spending on pensions and health care. All their contributions to employee health care, right, are tax deductible. And the same for their pension contributions. They're tax deductible. That is $5.4 trillion over the next decade. $5.4 trillion. Now, of course, individuals get tax deductions here for, you know, their health plan and so forth. If they sign up for a certain procedure where that income is not taxed. But most workers don't sign up for that, you see. So most of the $5.4 trillion goes to companies. Hmm? Yeah. Exactly how much, I don't know. But it's about $385 billion a year in health care and pension tax deductions. Most of it going to companies. All right, so these are the big four, big five tax loopholes on the personal income tax side. There are big loopholes on the corporate tax side, too. We'll talk about those. But, we're talking about like $10 trillion here over the course of a decade. There's $10 trillion in personal income tax loopholes. We'll see that they're not really closing those. All right. Let's talk about the corporate income tax here. Okay. The corporate income tax under this proposal of Trump is going to go from 35% nominal rate to a 20% nominal rate. Nominal. In other words, that's what it says before you take advantage of the loopholes. All right. Corporate rate, 35% to 20%. Ah, but if you're a multinational corporation, the rate that you pay offshore will be reduced from 35% to 10%. Nominal rate from 35% to 10%. But that 10%, you see, in the small print, is only on high-profit offshore subsidiaries. If it's not defined as a high-profit offshore subsidiary, there's no tax, zero tax, on offshore profits. So the corporate offshore rate, which they haven't been paying much anyway, they've been accumulating all this taxation offshore taxable income and not paying, is going to be reduced to from 35 to 10 to zero. Yes, they won't pay anything offshore. Now, do you think if multinational corporations will pay nothing offshore and they're going to have to pay 20% onshore, big cut from 35%, 20% onshore in the U.S., that they're not going to move their operations offshore? That they're not going to move more jobs offshore? Of course they are. Yeah, well, Trump says he's going to create jobs. Well, his tax cut bill is going to eliminate jobs. He's going to move jobs offshore. All right, so let's continue here with the corporate tax cut provisions. Now, corporations have been stuffing their profits offshore. And so you can do this interesting ways. If you're a multinational corporation, you can actually shift your profits onshore that you would pay taxes on to book them through your offshore subsidiaries. So it looks like you're not making profits in the U.S. You just accounting-wise moved the money around. You moved it offshore where there's virtually no tax rate on offshore. Like these tech companies, they move to Europe, Ireland, Netherlands, and places like that, they pay virtually nothing. In fact, the European Union now is trying to go after the Googles and the Facebooks because they've been paying nothing, right? There's a big to-do about it. And, of course, the U.S. government is intervening on their behalf. And all this thing called corporate inversions, where corporations in the U.S. Simply on paper move their headquarters, to Ireland or Netherlands or someplace, Luxembourg, places like that. So they're really registered as foreign corporations, and they virtually pay nothing offshore, and they get away from paying anything for their profits onshore in the U.S. You see, inversions, the inversions loophole. We've talked about that before. I've written about that. Articles, you can read them on my blog, jackrasmus.com, particularly in 2014-15, when this inversion deal became trend became very obvious. You know, the tech companies, the big banks, and the big pharma companies are some of the worst abusers of the inversion loophole. Well, that's continuing, you see. That's continuing, inversion loophole. They're not doing, it's silent. They're not saying anything about it, even though it was a big deal a couple years ago. Nothing about it in this tax reform bill, right? Also, this bill, on the corporate side, offshore multinationals, provides for a one-time 12% tax on the admitted $2.5 trillion corporations U.S. are holding in offshore subsidiaries and not paying taxes. In other words, if you bring your money back, you only have to pay 12% multinational corporation, 12% instead of the 35%. But you got 8 years to pay for it, you see, to pay that 12%. That's a long time for your tax lawyers to figure out how not to pay it. But if you read the fine print, that's only on the cash they're holding offshore. You know, they admit $2.5 trillion is more than that. But that's on the cash held offshore in subsidiaries, the 12% rate. It's only 5% on liquid assets held in offshore subsidiaries. So, you know, any enterprising U.S. multinational is going to quickly redefine cash into other forms of liquid assets, which is near cash, right? To pay the 5% tax rate, and then they will reconvert it back to cash, right? Okay, so really, it's a one-time 5% on hoarded $2.5 trillion-plus offshore by U.S. multinational corporations, 5%, which is what they paid in 2005. You see, this whole game has played before under George W. Bush when the same thing, repatriation bill, it's called, corporations that held $700 billion offshore, and they were enticed to bring it back in 2005 instead of paying 35%. Congress said, well, you pay 5.25% if you bring it back and you invest in U.S. jobs in the U.S. That was a proviso. Well, they brought back about $300-400 billion of the $700 billion at the time, but they didn't invest it in jobs. They bought up their competition, or they distributed in dividends and so forth. They didn't create the jobs, you see. Having gotten away with it once before in 2005, you know, they said, well, let's play this game again. And they did. And $2.5 trillion offshore and more. And they got Congress here to agree to 5%, bring it back at 5%, 12% or 5%, right? Depending whether it's cash or liquid assets. Well, a big windfall here for multinational corporations, big retained earnings boost for these guys. Well, do you think it's a surprise that their stock prices have jumped as a result? Yes, it's simple, you know, because they know they got more income there and their bottom line's going to look fatter, and therefore their stock price justifies a further hike. And that's what happened and will continue to happen here. Okay. What else in the corporate tax bill side of the Trump tax cuts here we're looking at? Well, business expense deductions. You see, if you're a business, you can use your certain expenses to reduce your taxes. Wouldn't it be nice if an average worker, you know, could deduct the cost of his grocery bill from his taxes? Hmm? Well, you know, businesses can do it. They're supposedly closing some of these business deduction loopholes for small businesses, you see. After 5 years, small businesses won't be able to immediately deduct some of their expenses. However, if you're involved in the real estate, you can still continue to deduct all of your business. You can expense a business expense, in other words. All right. Another biggie here on the corporate business side, actually business side, is what's called the business income pass-through provision. If you're a business but you're not a corporation, which amounts to like 80% of all businesses in the U.S. are not corporations. They're proprietorships and partnerships. And some of the partnerships are pretty big, you know, if you're a real estate partnership or if you're a lawyer partnership or other professional group partnership, right? Their income, they're not corporations, so they're not subject to the corporate tax. Their income gets mixed with their other forms of personal income. And, of course, if it's personal income, they're taxed nominally at the 39.6%. Well, the provision is to reduce that to 25%, from 39.6 to 25%. Small businesses, unincorporated small businesses, get a huge tax cut. Right, corporations tax rate nominal from 35% to 20%. Right, offshore companies from 35% to 10% to 5%. Non-corporate businesses from 39% to 25%. This is the most massive business tax cut we've seen in decades. I mean, it even makes George W. Bush 2001-3 tax cuts, you know, look cheap. Well, there was so much stink about the business income pass-through reduction from 40 to 25% that this latest version only applies to 30% of non-corporate business earnings, the first 30%. Well, then business lobbyists, the National Federation of Independent Businesses and Small Business Groups and so forth are lobbying intensely now to raise that from 30. They'll probably get at least 50%, right, of earnings for this almost 50% tax cut. Big deal here for corporations. This is a corporate tax cut, right? Corporate tax, to sum up, corporate tax rate, nominal rate reduced 35% to 20%, even though they're only paying what? What are corporations actually paying? Multinational corporations, you know, are paying only about 17% globally. Their effective tax rate in the U.S. is 12.5%. That's their effective tax rate, what they actually pay. Not the nominal rate, 35, but they actually pay 12.2%. Offshore, multinationals get almost a total tax break. They pay maybe 2 or 3% of their income. And then you can even throw in the U.S. states that have a corporate income tax, and they're only paying about 2% there. And there's a race to the bottom there. You know, their states can't move fast enough to cut their corporate tax rate. Look at, you know, the deal going on here with Amazon, right? And they're providing negative taxes, in other words, subsidies. We'll give you money. You pay no taxes, and we'll give you money, Amazon, if you move to our state. What promises of 40,000 jobs? What a BS estimate that is, you know? And those whatever jobs Amazon creates are going to go away in a decade as they automate the whole operation in the warehouse, which is the plan. All right. I don't want to focus on Amazon that much. I want to look at the bigger picture here. So the effective tax rate of U.S. multinational corporations is, you know, 16, 17%. But now when you reduce their tax rate from 35% nominal to 10% on only high profit offshore subsidiaries and zero, right? And you allow them for the rest and zero, and when you allow them to bring back their $2.5 trillion at 5%, Well, the effective tax rate for multinationals is going to take a big downward dip. And then we got the non-corporate income pass-through, 39.6% to 25%. Small businesses are going to get a big windfall as well. And you keep the inversions, and you keep the carried interest for the hedge funds and the private equity firms. No mention of that loophole. Wow, they're making money hand over fist here, corporations and businesses. Well, let's move on and talk about the personal income tax. That's the corporate income tax. And believe me, it's far more than $1.5 trillion. You know, just reducing the corporate rate from 35 to 20%, the nominal rate is estimated at $1.5 trillion. You know, so I wouldn't be surprised if all these corporate business tax cuts aren't twice that, $3 trillion. And we haven't even added the personal income tax picture here. Well, let's look at that. Well, we had three brackets, you see. Or we had seven brackets, rather. And the idea was to reduce it to three brackets. That created a bit of a stink here that the wealthiest 1% were going to get so much. So they created a fourth bracket here since the Trump announced the outlines of his tax proposals a while back, which I talked about. They created a fourth bracket here. So we're going to have a 12% bracket, a 25% bracket, a new 35, and then they'll keep the 39.6 for the super wealthy. And the super wealthy have all these loopholes. They don't care about 39.6. Okay, but the next bracket down, which will be those whose annual incomes, households, annual incomes between $480,000 a year and $1 million, instead of paying 39.6, they will now pay 35%, you see. So they get immediate 5% windfall in their nominal. They still get some loopholes that they manipulate, of course. The top rate, they have all the loopholes they need. But here's the biggies. Here's the biggies for the wealthy when it comes to personal income tax cuts. They're going to end the alternative minimum tax altogether. This is tens of billions of dollars a year. By the way, Trump in 2005 paid $35 million in alternative income, AMT, alternative minimum tax, 35. So he's going to be a big beneficiary, you see, his family, right? They hate the AMT, and now they're going to get rid of it altogether. Okay, and they're going to significantly reduce the estate tax. They're going to end it eventually here, and that brings in $172 billion. They're going to end that. And in the meantime, before they end it, they're going to double the exemption starting in 2018, double it. So that will cut that tax in half and that revenue in half. By the way, only two-tenths of 1% actually pay the estate tax, two-tenths of 1%. And you have to have an estate over $11 million to even begin taxing, being taxed by the estate tax. Yeah, $11 million. And that only starts, and then it goes higher. End the estate tax, cut it in half in the interim, end the alternative minimum tax, reduce the tax bracket here for 480 to 1 million income households. Allow hedge fund managers and private equity managers to maintain carried interest, right, where their corporate income gets taxed at a personal income rate, carried interest. Those are the biggies here on the personal income tax side. Now, they say they're going to provide tax cuts for the middle class in this. Well, they're ending the personal exemption and replacing it with a lower $300 per parent. And that's going to end after 5 years anyway. So in other words, they're raising the personal exemption, well, lowering the exemption, raising the cost, and that only really has a benefit for middle class. They say they're going to raise the standard deduction to $12,000. Well, that's going to benefit the poor, you know, sure. People with $24,000 and below will get a tax cut here. You see, all these tax bills are really benefiting the top end, making the middle pay for it, and throwing in a sop or two for the poor to make it look like it's fair, right? The sop usually comes in the form of the earned income tax credit or the child tax credit. And it doesn't cost that much to them, but, you know, makes it look like it's fair. And the middle pays the freight here. Middle class pays the freight. So they're going to raise the child tax credit from $1,000 to $1,600 and raise the standard deduction, which will benefit the working poor with families. Yes, but they're going to eliminate the personal exemption. And all the other cuts on the personal income side are for the super wealthy and the rich. Carried interest, state tax, AMT, brackets, right? That's all for them. Okay. So their corporations, their businesses benefit significantly. And they get to keep more of the money that their corporations pass through to them, their businesses pass through to them. You see, that's how it works. You got to cut, if you want to make the wealthy wealthier, you got to cut their money-generating machine, which is their business. You got to cut the rates that they pay and cut the rates that they pass on their profits to their wealthy owners. Got to cut that too, right? And then those who get the pass through, let them keep more of it by cutting their personal income tax. See, so there's like three levels. Cut the corporate business tax, reduce the tax on the pass-through of the income from corporations to the wealthy, and then reduce the taxes that the wealthy eventually, on the income the wealthy eventually get. And all those elements are here in this bill that we just went through. Now, how is the middle class paying for this is the question. Now, Republicans in the House are claiming a middle class family of $59,000 income per year will get an $1,182 tax cut out of this. Well, I don't believe that in one New York minute. Here's why. Right. First of all, the mortgage interest deduction is the cap, which was $1 million, is reduced to $500,000. In other words, if your house is worth more than $500,000, then what's above that, you can't deduct the interest. It's not clear if you can't deduct it at all or whether it's prorated. I think it's probably just eliminated altogether, right? That's really going to whack people who live on the coast, Northeast and West Coast, where prices are higher for homes. And by 10 years, most of the homes will be worth more than $500,000. The deduction, the mortgage interest deduction, is being cut. The state and local tax deduction is being cut, being eliminated. Right, at least in this version, the House version of the bill, this cap on mortgage interest and the state and local tax deduction elimination is not only going to negatively affect the actual payment of taxes, but it's going to reduce property values and therefore the wealth of middle class which is mostly embedded in their homes, right? So you got an income hit here, and you by a tax hike, and you're going to get a wealth hit here, right? Now that's not all. The medical cost deduction is also going to be eliminated. Right now, if you have high medical costs, and this is a growing problem because insurance is not covering a lot of high medical costs, or you may not have insurance at all, especially if Trump eliminates ACA or premiums rise too high and people can't afford them, right? Well, the medical cost deduction, which now you can reduce your taxes by itemizing and costs over 10% of your income, can be a deduction. Now, folks who have long-term serious health problems, or the children have health problems, so forth, right? Their medical costs are higher than 10% of their annual income. So reducing this, or eliminating this, excuse me, not reducing, eliminating the medical cost deduction provision is going to amount to a tax hike, a big hike for them, just as eliminating state and local tax deduction and reducing mortgage interest is going to hit them negatively, right? Tuition is also going to rise because the tax credit for college institutions for endowments and so forth is going to be taken away, 1.4%, $3 billion. So tuitions will rise, mostly in the private universities, private colleges, right? But nonetheless, a rare disease drug testing provision for the drug companies. Drug companies previously could deduct the cost of this testing for rare diseases. That's going to end. So folks that have rare diseases who might have been cured as a result of new drugs are not going to be, so there'll be more deaths for them. Right, and there's an elimination of alternative energy credits for solar, the auto, electric car auto, and solar panels and wind panels and so forth. That's going to be eliminated. Well, that's a middle class thing. Mm-hmm. And cuts will be coming to Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, and education. To pay for a lot of this. This is coming. All right, so that's going to reduce your disposable income, Mr. Middle Class, as well. So, a lot of these, the ending of deductions and so forth, are targeting the middle class. The middle class is paying for ending the AMT and the reducing and ending the estate tax and not doing anything about carried interest and eliminating the personal exemptions as we know it, and business pass-through reduction, and corporate tax rate, and multinational tax rate, and repatriation, and inversions, and business deductions, and carried interest. All of these provisions are being paid for by the middle class, and the net result is for the middle class is going to be an increase, you see. When you look at the bigger picture, the spending and everything, it's going to be an increase, a reduction in their net net income as a result of all this. Okay, let's talk about ideological themes here. We started a little bit about tax cuts create jobs. There's no empirical evidence of that in the U.S. That argument assumes that you increase income, retained income at the corporate level, they will automatically, immediately invest and expand business and create jobs. Well, there's no evidence of that, empirical evidence of that. That's supply-side lies, supply-side economics BS. It doesn't exist. There's no way you can show that causal relationship. Now, there may have been a correlation, but, the growth and job expansion might obviously was due to other things. There's no way to separate out and show it's been because of tax cuts, right? A lot of this retained corporate income from tax cutting or low interest rates, as I've been arguing on the monetary side, goes offshore. These businesses invest offshore because the profits are greater. Or they invest in financial asset markets, stocks and bonds, because the profits are greater. Or they distribute it to their shareholders in dividends and stock buybacks. Or they divert it to offshore tax havens. Investment is not determined by tax rates or even interest rates. Right? And if, you know, the whole result is some of these taxes here for multinationals is going to result in loss of jobs because they're going to move more jobs offshore. Less income for the middle class is going to mean less consumption and more layoffs and less jobs, and a 10% to 0% repatriation offshore rate will result in exporting of jobs. So it not only does not increase jobs, it will lower jobs. What about raising wages? You know, Trump's Council of Economic Advisors here, Hassert, said, oh, $4,000 in income for middle class on average, right? Well, that assumes that they're going to create the jobs that will stimulate demand for labor and raise wages. But if you don't create the jobs, then you're not going to create the stimulus for the demand for labor. Again, there's no empirical evidence in support of this argument. It ignores other causes for wage stagnation and or wage growth. And this guy Laffer, who created this idea, this ideology of supply side, that tax cuts create greater revenues for the government and create jobs. He's arguing that it increases wages, and he shows that wages rose under Reagan. Well, but what he's referring to is the average wage, which, of course, for the very top of the scale, the wage scale, salary scale, including managers and professionals, yes, it rises. So he takes an average, which rises because the top rises, and he says, hey, look, you know, tax cuts resulted in wage increases. Well, Hassert and the CEA, Council of Economic Advisors, are making the same tired old argument that Laffer made decades ago. And by the way, they're only looking at full-time wages, not part-time, 60 million people part-time. And then, of course, there's going to be spending cuts and transfer payments to pay for all this, which will reduce real wage income. Another lie, ideological lie, is it will result in GDP growth because it's going to result in more investment. Well, it didn't happen under Reagan or Bush, so it's not going to happen again. Right? Tax cuts do not lead to tax revenue growth, do not lead to investment in GDP growth and therefore more revenue. Quite the opposite. And it's not passed on in wage increases. The final idea is that we need this to compete with the rest of the world, right? Well, the U.S. effective rate is only 17% with the rest of the world. All right, that's the ideology. Next week, we're going to take a look at Powell appointment and the central bank. More free money for bankers.